Have you ever wondered about the meaning behind your favorite song lyric, or why certain melodies make your skin tingle? I'm Cole Kushna, and these are the kinds of questions I try to answer on Dissect, a podcast that dives deep into one album per season, examining the music, lyrics, and meaning of one song per episode. I've dissected full albums by Kendrick Lamar, Radiohead, Tyler the Creator, Beyonce, Kanye, and more. Our latest season just launched, all about MF Doom's Mad Villainy. Listen to Dissect wherever you get your podcasts, because great art deserves more than a swipe.
This episode is presented by Walmart Plus. Walmart Plus is the membership that helps you save on things you expect, plus the things you don't, like free delivery from your store with no markups, gas savings, and even a free Paramount Plus subscription. Start your free 30-day trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus Essential Plan only. Separate registration required. $35 order minimum. See walmart.com/plus for details.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Welcome to Every Single Album. I'm Nora Princiati, and as always, I am here with Nathan Hubbard. Nathan, how was your weekend?
Well, it was fine, but it's Taylor Swift week. I mean, my weekend wasn't as good as Taylor's. Bouncing around Coachella. We had Taychella Part 2 this weekend.
Yeah, did you? You were not at Taychella, but I think spiritually you kind of were.
sure.
As it is a week, less than a week at this point. It's Monday morning as we record this. So we are officially in Tortured Poets Week. And I feel that Coachella turned into sort of the kickoff event for Tortured Poets Release Week. And I have no complaints about that.
I thought it was great. She definitely was suboptimally sober.
Or optimally, depending on how you think about it.
She's being lifted up out of the crowd. It's nice to see them sort of, you know, I mean, my favorite part of the whole thing is Justin Bieber is there and around and nobody's videoing him. He's just like an extra in the Travis Taylor thing at Coachella. Fantastic.
Which honestly is probably exactly how he wants it. Justin Bieber is someone who has historically not loved the glare of his own spotlight. He probably is realizing that he would prefer to only attend events that Taylor and Travis also attend from here on out. So maybe he'll become like one of those little fish that swim around sharks because they just want, like, they want the protection.
I don't know. All I know is Ice Spice was taking down a giant joint and standing up like nothing was happening. She can hold her weed.
You heard it here first. All right. There are basically 4 days until Tortured Poets is released. And though I'm counting Taychella as a sort of kickoff event.
I think it is.
Okay. Tell me more about that if you have something to say.
I think this is calculated. I mean, if you remember leading up to Midnights, so we had all the videos and the clues. And this time, I think it seems to me that the calculation was, I am the biggest star on the planet right now. Anywhere Travis and I go is going to get attention. Rather than do an entire album setup and a whole thing, and we can talk about this Apple thing, which feels like a half-hearted sort of hidden clue thing, kind of like let's throw a little bit of red meat.
You think it's half-hearted? Because it's not like there aren't clues and Easter eggs and...
It's Apple Music, which has lower market share. I don't see it absolutely blowing up everywhere. It hasn't created remotely as much buzz as the Vault stuff did, where you had to sort of decode. It doesn't feel like there's an internet-wide frenzy. It feels like more people are relying on a couple of Swifties to go do the work, and then, oh, okay, hereby was the first word. You know, so I think it's been much more about, let's just get Taylor out there. she goes to Coachella. That's going to take the oxygen out of everything else that happens. Poor Olivia Rodrigo. God, she's up there with No Doubt. She did a great job, and nobody's talking about it because Taylor and Travis are at the Neon Carnival at 3:15 in the morning. But yeah, that is just what it felt like to me, is they decided that they didn't need to do all of the traditional interviews and even games, online games, because the spotlight is so bright on them right now.
Okay. So if people haven't figured it out by now, that's what we're doing today. We've been enjoying Pop Girl Spring. We've gone through some great albums and had a lot of fun doing that, which we will continue to do later on this spring. However, it's Tortured Poets Week. It's going to be Tortured Poets Week for over a week here at every single album. And it's time for us to talk about just sort of everything that's in the ecosystem a few days before the release. And I'm interested that you feel like she's not doing much, because I don't know. The playlists to me was a big thing. So what we have right now is the Apple Music lyric anagram hidden word game. Right. So, and I agree with you. I don't know that everybody saw this. So just in case people missed it, over the weekend, Taylor started hiding a word a day in the lyrics to one song from the Five Stages of Grief playlist. And the first was hidden in Glitch, which is on the Denial playlist. And the hidden word was Hereby. And then on Sunday, the second word was Peace, was in Peace. And it was Conduct. And Peace is on the Bargaining playlist. So Hereby, Conduct. There's a lot of people who think it's going to spell out, you know, I hereby conduct the first meeting of the Tortured Poets Department or something like that. And we will see. That's fun. You know, it's nice to have a little hidden word thing. To me, what's happening there is she's leading people back to the playlists.
Well, let's talk about them.
The playlists to me was a big deal. The five playlists, each one for one of the five stages of grief, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And to me, this was a big deal because she puts these playlists out and she has a little message that accompanies each one of them. And the two to me that were kind of like, whoa, were denial and bargaining, particularly denial, because she's just recontextualizing a lot of songs that people know as romantic songs, as love songs, as happy songs. And she said in the voice note, this is a list of songs about getting so caught up in the idea of something that you have a hard time seeing red flags, possibly resulting in moments of denial and maybe a little bit of delusion. And on that playlist, there's Lavender Haze. There's Sweet Nothing.
You're in the kitchen humming. All that you ever wanted from me was sweet nothing.
There's Cruel Summer.
We say that we'll just screw it up in these trying times, we're not trying.
And there's Lover.
Can we always be this close forever and ever and on?
And I mean, telling everyone in your audience that Lover is a song that she wrote while experiencing denial, to me, quote, is like a big deal.
To quote Will Ferrell in Anchorman, I don't believe you.
Okay.
I don't believe you. I love the way her mind works. I love the way that she needs structure in her life. She needs numbers to add up. She needs to make mathematical and structural sense of her entire universe. And I think she can do that retroactively, almost as like a mind game for her. I do not believe that all of these songs were written from a place of one of five feelings or emotions. And I think this was done as a fun game, but I think if you really press her, I mean, Lover was not written from a place of denial. It was not written from a place of denial.
You don't think it's possible that Lover, which was written to sound like a first dance song at a wedding, and look, this is going to be a breakup album. It seems really clear that that's the case.
Yes.
There are rumors swirling about, you know, cheating and not being comfortable in the limelight and blah, 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 blah. And I don't think that there is a lot of concrete evidence to support some of those theories. So I don't want to
get
being
comfortable in the limelight. There's a lot of evidence.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's no evidence
to the cheating
stuff.
Like, I just don't want to go there because it seems like people are creating stuff and that's hurtful and whatever. The one thing that Taylor Swift herself has seemingly sort of sanctioned as part of the issue here in song has to do with marriage. So
yes,
it doesn't seem impossible to me, but I'm interested in the fact that it doesn't totally hold for you, because if that's the case, then I have to tell you that I feel weird about this.
Yeah. Like, I feel weird about it. I just think recontextualizing your entire catalog into five structures that change the meaning of a ton of the songs in service of an album that's coming up, and a promo campaign that seemed to glom on to some structure that the fan base created when they saw the vinyls, it feels like a lot of like flywheeling and Easter egging that is taking on more meaning than maybe it meant. I could absolutely be wrong. I just, when I saw the playlist structures, I actually was like, I'm out on this. Like, this is fun to go through and it's creating a lot of buzz and people are like, I am dying at, you know, song X being on playlist Y. Holy moly. I just feel like it feels like a retroactive piecing together of puzzle pieces that and repainting of pictures with colors that were meant for a different canvas.
So if I can then be a little bit like vulnerable on main here and like, don't, nobody come at me, because I just have to work through this. Okay. And I just have to speak my truth. I feel a little bad for Joe. I feel like there is a lot of weird energy in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And the idea that you feel like you are reading this as something that was sort of like after the fact thrown together and stitched into a tapestry that represents a lot of the last however many album cycles and however many years as something really sad and painful and something where there was like a lot of hidden harm behind the scenes, which is the message that I get from these playlists. What I take from, you know, the statement of that is it wasn't happy and there was a lot of harm going on that people didn't know about. And that's a complicated thing to do when you are one of the most powerful celebrities in the world, because there is an inevitable punching down that you have to navigate and try to avoid. And I think the only way to actually do that is if it's really real, is if it's like, well, it doesn't matter who I am or the stature of my celebrity or the, you know, power dynamic between someone and their ex. That's her life and her story and her feelings and her emotions. And if that all comes through, I think really like truthfully and honestly and vividly in this album, then I think and hope that where I come down on this is like, you know what? Tough break. Like if you're in a relationship with someone who has this track record of turning their personal experiences and their pain into their art, then that's the cost of doing business. If this is like, this is searching for a narrative, it kind of weirds me out.
Well,
and I have been thinking this for a couple of weeks, and I'm just going to say it out loud, even if that might be a very unpopular opinion among people who listen to this podcast, or maybe it's something that other people are sort of like trying to figure out too. I don't know, but like,
She got up on stage. She got up on stage before the release of Speak Now, and without naming names, basically said, please do not come after John Mayer. And that seemed to happen after people came for Jake around the release of Red and the scarf thing and the video and all that. This feels a lot more like Red than it does Speak Now in terms of the buzz that's being allowed to build. And I think for sure, in hindsight, at the end of any relationship, you look back and you go, oh, and you see a bunch of things in a different light, and you feel like you were a prisoner. I mean, it's clear she tried to make this work for 6 years. It's clear that she probably wanted to get married and that he didn't. And it's clear that there's a whole lot of hurt about that that would persist within the relationship. And then afterwards, when you go, God, some of that feels like I just wasted 6 years of my life. I could see a ton of resentment and anger and all of those things.
Which she's so entitled to.
100%.
I really firmly believe it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how famous you are. It doesn't matter how rabid your fans are. It doesn't, like, if that is her story, she's entitled to it. And you don't get to say, you know, you're too rich or too famous or too whatever.
No way.
To be able to write your own breakup album.
No, this wouldn't be her first breakup album. Let's be clear.
Right.
And as you say, like, you know what you're getting. You know, if you haven't been paying attention, that's on you, buddy. It's just the whipping the bass into a frenzy around it. And I wonder, because we still have days left, I wonder if she isn't going to overtly put some constraints on this, or if she's actually still carrying so much resentment and anger about the relationship that she's intentionally not going to put constraints on it. But we have seen her put constraints on it before.
She's not putting constraints on this, Nathan. There's no world in which that's happening.
Let's see. I mean, I
think... So long, London. My boy only breaks his favorite toys. But daddy, I love him. I can fix him. No, really, I can. The smallest man who ever lived. Like, this is a pretty... Of all we know about this album, just from track listings, from, you know, So Long London is track 5, right? Like, she's naming names. And that is her history. That is what we love about Taylor Swift. It is a complicated thing to do.
When you're
right
the biggest
now.
Star in the world. Yeah.
And also, it's a complicated thing to do and a thing that she has never done about a 6-year relationship.
Yeah.
As like a fully formed human being, right?
Yeah.
Like,
when I say constraints, I just mean she didn't pull any punches on Speak Now. She didn't pull any punches on All Too Well. I'm sure it appears she didn't pull any punches on this album. I just wonder if outside of the art, in the days leading up, that she will direct the army to stand down from a full-on bullying campaign. It's turning into, certainly in sections and corners of the fan base, it's turning into a full-on bullying campaign. Now, again, as you said, Joe Alwyn, you signed up for this. You knew what you were getting. You're a big boy. But I don't know. There is a tiny bit of ugliness as we lead up, which is, let's gear up for a fight. And I'm not so sure that that's what this is about for her as much as it is articulating all of the feelings that happen in a relationship when there aren't mutual feelings, right? There was clearly a disconnect and a dissonance between what he wanted and what she wanted. And that is going to be the mother of this art. Well, that's okay, but can we keep the fan base from adopting that and seeking vengeance?
And to some extent, like, the answer to that is probably no. And I don't know.
She spared John Mayer. The fan base was gearing up for a fight, and that went away quietly into the night.
Yeah, I mean, doing that 10 years after the fact or what, like, I'm not saying that it's not, that it wasn't a good thing to do. I was really impressed with her in that moment. I thought that was actually a rare moment of someone in that type of position sort of trying to harness it. I just think that it's very different.
Well, she seems to be as publicly comfortable and as in love as she's ever been in her life. Overtly, that's what it looks like to most of us, I think, right?
Well, sure. But like, again, what the takeaway from this would be is sort of like, you know, don't believe what you see. I'm less concerned with what it actually means in real life in a weird way than I am with sort of like establishing the stakes of this album within the context of a sort of who won the breakup type of public narrative. It just doesn't feel like a really right artistic space, I guess, but then maybe it's a really fruitful one, actually. Like, maybe, I guess what I'm trying to say here is it's making me feel like there was a lot of pressure on this album to come with receipts about what that relationship was like and what those experiences were like, because the context that has been built up around it is you didn't actually know what was going on. And it was a lot more tortured, pardon the pun, than people realized. And part of the project that's going on right now and has already started with the playlists is we're going to recontextualize a lot of that.
Mm.
And I don't actually, like, I obviously don't be a weirdo online. Don't bully people you don't know online or people you do know. Like, I don't mean to, like, I hope that, you know, everyone, including Joe or whatever, is, like, safe and healthy and happy and whatever. What's happening with me is not, like, oh, God, what's going to happen to Joe Alwyn? Like, I don't want to say that I don't care because he's a person, whatever, but that's just, like, not the thing that I'm worried about to the extent that I'm worried about anything. It just feels like it has already been established what this album is, and that feels like a lot of pressure.
For who? For you as a listener or for Taylor?
For Taylor. The album's written, right? So the songs are what they are. But it feels like she has really told us that there is a story to be told that happened and people didn't realize it was happening while it was happening. And so then this album has to kind of get into that. And look, maybe it has some real lyrical specificity that's heart-wrenching and sort of gets people there. And that's probably a great album. I mean, there is a world in which all of the anxiety that I have about sort of like the stakes that are being raised here is met. And this is like one of the great breakup albums of one of the great breakup songwriters ever, right? That's entirely possible. It just feels really big. It feels really emotionally big. And I think one thing that we've talked about in the past is like for people who have liked every single Taylor Swift album that has ever existed, there's always this like weird anxiety before yes. release.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. How much of this is just your every single time we do this, you are nervous and you're worried that it's not. I feel like this album, it doesn't have to be big. She is so big that she is now, as a cultural phenomenon, bigger than any piece of art that she could put out there. And she has put out so much art over the last 2 years that to me, it takes a little bit of pressure off this. This album can suck, and she's still going to be the biggest star in the world this summer, gallivanting around Europe with a 6'5" tight end from the Super Bowl winning football team.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the album charting. You know, everyone's going to listen to it. It's going to be huge. The metrics are going to be...
But when I said flop, I meant like the music. This one could be...
In a weird way, I'm not worried about the music. Like,
what are you worried about?
I just, at this point, have come to trust her enough that maybe I'm getting over that thing that we talked about and rechanneling that into worrying about a backlash or how people are going to receive it. I just think that you can kind of trace the contours of her career by whether or not she has had an appropriate foil. Like, Taylor Swift is a lover, but Taylor Swift is a fighter. And Taylor 100%. Swift kind of wants an adversary. And I don't know
she
that,
gets her
like,
feelings it, hurt.
And that's really compelling. It is a thing that I love to hear her channel. And I suppose where I land with this is like, are we about to learn that this like B-minus list British actor was the foil or was sort of that this experience rises to that level?
What level?
Where it's an appropriate thing for her to take on. Like the last chapter of this woman's career was spent essentially challenging the norms of the music industry writ large. To pivot from that to Taylor Swift versus Joe Alwyn, which is what this is turning into a little bit, is a tough needle to thread.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com. This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
So I hear you on that. I guess there's a couple things that I would say. First of all, the listener, the fan base is going to have to make some decisions about how they receive the art itself, because you're going to be listening to a breakup album while your entire social feed is filled up with her looking, again, like she is completely in love. Like the opposite of the relationship with Joe, as it's seemingly portrayed here. He was hidden away and, you know, afraid to let her bejewel. And Travis is sort of the definition of a guy who is empowering her to do that. And she seems to be very much happy and in love. So,
okay, but when she and Joe were together, there were really, really romantic and sweet looking public experiences between the two of them. When she talked about him at the Grammys, it was moving. When, you know, the little snippets in the documentary,
I agree. That's going to make it hard to recontextualize the relationship and buy into, I was, you know, 6 years a hostage, but it is going to be knowing just her public nature right now and what appears to be the state of her, you know, emotional and heart, you know, well-being is going to be an interesting thing to try to put aside to just receive the art. And so I am in my own way, like wondering, how am I going to try to approach these songs? Am I going to try on first blush to connect every single lyric with one of those photos or one of the mini eras within the Joe era? Or am I going to just try to take it as a song that's reflective of a set of feelings and block all of the Taylor Swift is a massive star and I know more about her life than I want to and than I should to be able to objectively receive this art? It's going to be an interesting listening experience for that reason, because of just the height of her stardom.
That's, I think, that's the best way of putting it. And that's maybe the best way of articulating my sense of slight anxiety here, is just, I am concerned it is going to be very difficult for people to hear the songs here. I want to be very clear here. I don't think that she's like doing a bad thing. Mm-hmm. This is her life. And until it seems like she's really intentionally whipping people into a frenzy, and you know, it's internet is going to internet. I don't really put that on her primarily. I just think that it's becoming about something that is really not the album itself. And therefore, unless the album itself really finds a way to both transcend that, but also satisfy all of the questions that context is creating about, like, well, what did we actually not know? And, you know, was there mutuality to this? Were there mistakes on both sides? Or is this like, this is a real villain? And I just think that's a hard thing to do. Now, if there's anyone who can, it's Taylor Swift, but
the hyper public nature of her current relationship with Travis is going to be part of this art, because there's going to be a part of that, which is her overtly and publicly saying, see, it is possible to be a partner to me. See, it is possible to do all these things that I'm telling you through this album I wasn't receiving. So how the listener and the fan base separates these things is going to be fascinating. Can I tell you what I'm worried about?
Every single album anxiety hour. Yes, please tell me.
Well, when we reviewed Midnights, we loved it. And as we reviewed the 1989 bonus tracks, we loved them. But we traced a lot of sounds to work that Taylor and Jack, and to a lesser extent, that Taylor and Aaron Dessner have done together. And Jack Antonoff, her primary producer, through the entire Joe years, right?
Yes.
And what we said at the end of that review, of that episode, was this is great. I really hope that she next time goes with new, fresher people to push her to a place of more, you know, discomfort or challenge to try something new, because we are hearing some songs and some sounds that we've heard before. And we said that delicately, but we meant it. And now we have a Taylor Swift album coming that looks longer than most of the ones that she's done, that has longer songs, that has more flowery lyric title or song titles, that I expect more punctuation, that I expect is lyrically going to be somewhat different. But sonically, my anxiety this week is it's going to sound like a bit more of the same and less of a whoa, which is how we felt when she first started working with Aaron Dessner. Or whoa, you know, when she made the transition to pop and first started working with Jack Antonoff. So I'm a little bit anxious that when we wake up Saturday morning, you and I, having had this thing in our hands for about 24 hours, and we do our every single album pod on Tortured Poets, that I'm going to have to dance around this exact question, which is, shoot, it's got really interesting insight. The lyrics are fascinating. She's opened her heart. And I feel like we've heard some of this before.
So we don't know. We should say that we don't know for a fact, right, who's going to be credited on this album. It seems fairly safe to assume that Jack and Aaron Dessner remain the primary collaborators.
Yes.
There's a photo of one of the vinyls that Taylor posted where you can see like S-S-N-E-R in a line on it that looks like sort of the credit line on the record, which seems like it would say, you know, produced by Aaron Dessner or whatever. She's been in and out of Electric Lady quite a bit now, you know, whatever that means. Jack did the weird thing where he hung up on the Dutch newspaper that asked if he was, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, one day he just didn't want to answer the question.
Or somebody, like, I was revisiting that because I was like, are there any other clues about who's working on this? And I'd forgotten that it was a Dutch newspaper that asked Jack Antonoff, are you working on Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department? And Jack said, you know, I don't talk about that. If you want a clickbaity thing, go somewhere else or something. I'm paraphrasing. And then he hung up. And I just forgot that it was a foreign publication. I'm actually, frankly, not sure that the Dutch newspaper does know that Jack Antonoff doesn't talk about that. Frankly, I'm not sure that I knew that Jack Antonoff doesn't talk about Taylor Swift. Jack Antonoff talks about Taylor Swift quite a bit.
It was a strange reaction. There's a lot of people who've been asked about this album, even in private, by me, who've said, yo, I've got some NDAs. Like the long arm of the law is effective in the Taylor
tightly.
Swift universe right now. Yeah.
I'll speak from the heart for the, not for the second time this podcast. I've hopefully been doing it the entire time. But I'll get another thing off my chest here. Can I say that I don't get Jack Antonoff's sort of like public vibe and persona whatsoever?
Did you see him fall off the stage at Coachella?
I did. I'm not at all saying anything negative. I kind of think it's funny, but I just want to go on record saying that like the constant bit that he seems to be doing when he talks to interviewers or like is on camera, I don't understand it. And I would love it if someone would explain it to me because I never know when he's serious. I never once am like, okay, like I whatever his sense of irony is, I can't compute it. I'm incapable of following.
It's the Jersey sense of humor escapes you.
I don't think it's a New Jersey thing. I know plenty of people from New Jersey whose bits I can interpret. Like the way that he tweets, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's sort of funny. I'm sort of like, I'm
constant,
intrigued, and I would
bit
like
about
to learn
being
more.
Constantly busy and like,
yeah,
I can't do
I
this.
Don't get
I have
it.
To work.
Like, I yeah. don't get the bit. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take this spot here, but I it's think fine. About like, I've thought this so many times, and I don't think I've ever said it out loud. I couldn't possibly understand less what Jack Antonoff is doing when he comports himself in the public eye, but I would be interested to learn more.
Well, I hope that you get whatever musical work that they have done for this album, because again, that is the thing I'm most concerned about. Lots of content being created on top of itself, lots of overlap in the timelines of when all these things are created, and invariably there are going to be some repurposing of sounds or snippets of things. I really am excited to hear this record. I'm desperately hoping that it sounds different and like a big step forward, but it may be that the emotional heaviness around the end of this relationship with Joe was the fuel for this fire. And what she chose to do was use a comfortable medium, comfortable people, comfortable sounds to tell this story of 6 years of her life.
You know where I'm landing after this conversation, which has really helped me process some of my feelings, is that I think you're right about that. I think if we set the expectations of there's going to be a real sonic shift here and something left field and unexpected, I don't think that we're going to go there. I think it's pretty clear that Jack and Aaron, two people who she's done most of her recent work with, but also particularly in Jack's case, but I think in Aaron's as well, she's described, and a lot of their collaborators have described, as people who are particularly adept at creating a safe space to work in and creating a space where it feels possible to emote some of the most challenging and sad and deep feelings of a person's experience that they want to put into an album. That is the thing that Taylor Swift likes about working with Jack Antonoff the most, right? Is their personal ability to sort of like get to those places together. And where I'm landing here and finding, again, no pun intended, maybe a little bit of peace 4 days before this album comes out.
Here we go.
Is she's taking, this is a big swing. She's taking a big swing because it's a big swing to write a huge breakup album that bears it all and to just do it. And I think that's what she's doing. I think she's saying, I have made a career in part at being unbelievably good at channeling these experiences and writing about specific moments of heartbreak. And many other things, as we've talked about a zillion times, Taylor Swift does not just write breakup songs, but she's really fucking good at it. And it's absolutely been a building block. And I think she's taking the challenge head on here of saying, I went through the mother of all breakups in her life. And what do I do when I'm completely devastated? I write about it. And I'm not going to pretend that that's not what this is. And I can actually reframe. Maybe, am I going through the stages of grief? Am I now in bargaining? Maybe.
You are.
We'll find out.
You're really progressing down the path. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Am I allowed to cry? But maybe where I'm coming to is that she's just meeting that head on and not saying, I'm going to try to obfuscate and I'm going to try to, I mean, think about the things that we said about Folklore and Evermore, not like in a totally complimentary way, but just in a sort of like, yeah, okay, these are about characters, Taylor, like this song's about Taylor Swift. And she's just saying like, this is what happened in my life. And Is that a complicated thing to navigate when you are the most famous woman in the world? Absolutely. Is it probably additionally complicated when the imbalances of that dynamic in her previous relationship seem to have been one of the things that didn't go right? Absolutely. Do I still worry a little bit about a sort of outside Swiftiedom reception to that imbalance? Yeah. But if what she's saying is like, I am working with the people who I feel like I can channel all of that with, and we're just going to do it. And this isn't actually about like doing something really all that new, but is more about taking something, the breakup song, which is part of her signature as an artist, and saying, this is the, you know, this is the mother of all breakup songs and breakup albums of my career. And this was devastating, and I'm channeling that, and I'm really going for it. Then like, I will saddle up for that. And I am now, after this podcast, emotionally ready. Thank you for going on this journey through the five stages with me.
You're welcome. We've done it.
Oh boy. Should we just end the pod there? Do you have anything else to say?
I think that's it. We have just a few days. You and I are going to spend 36-ish hours absolutely binging this thing, and we'll get back together and we'll see what this actually is. Is it just a cope? Is it a reaction to her famous words about my life is a fishbowl, and she's just come to accept that, and just like we're seeing everything there is to see with her and Travis, she's, you know, a window to her heart is this record. I don't know. It's I think in the big picture of her career, this is one of the safest albums that she's ever put out. I will understand more about the setup, I think, once we hear the music and the lyrical content. And yeah, it's going to be a fascinating week.
There will be a moment when I press play where I'm a little sad that Fortnite featuring Post Malone doesn't sound like the AI version that's all over TikTok right now. Because I gotta say, it kind of slaps. I've been waiting here, going out of Fortnite. 2 weeks to the day. Go listen to that. This has been Every Single Album, Tortured Poets Preview Edition. I'm Nora Princiati. As always, he is Nathan Hubbard. Thank you to Kai McMullen for producing this episode, and we will be back later this week to talk about the album.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.